This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. It's good to see you all. How many of you are coming to Jikoji for the first time? Thank you. Thanks for coming today. I know that many of you, many of us, work long hours in jobs that demand a lot of your life energy and your life force.
You're muted, Pamela.
How about now? Are we back? Yes. Sorry. Well, you missed the whole talk. Sorry. Guess what I talked about? No. I was just explaining. Okay, all of you people mute because I'll be able to hear you swallow and sneeze and Lord knows what else you're doing while I'm talking. I'm glad you're back. I'm glad we're back. I was just saying that I want to talk a little about the ceremony we did this morning, which was the first time we've ever done this Parinirvana ceremony. It celebrates, of course, the Buddha's final teaching and his passing. And we did that today because tonight we're going into Nehane Sesshin, which is one of the week-long meditation retreats that our founder, Kobun Chino, set up for this temple. And a Sesshin is a week of mostly meditation in one form or another meditation, whether you're doing the dishes or cooking or sitting or cleaning or sleeping or eating, we are practicing staying in our meditative state. So Nehane Sesshin commemorates the Buddha's death, his final passing, his nirvana, which is his release from the cycle of birth and death. Rebirth, rebirth, rebirth. Nehan is the Japanese word for nirvana. In Pali, you sometimes hear this expressed, nibbana. It is translated to mean blowing out. Nirvana, nibbana means blowing out. Like blowing out the candle this morning. I don't know if you could see that in Zoom land, but we blew out the candle. And also the blowing out of the activity of our grasping minds and the suffering and the unease associated with our minds that want things to be different than the way they are. When we commemorate the Buddha's death, we mark and celebrate his release from this cycle of suffering and rebirth. We celebrate his final release from samsara. Samsara is based upon a belief that a person continues to be born and reborn in different realms and in different forms until he or she or they are released. And that release is
I'm here. I'm not frozen.
We've got you, Akbar, but we don't have Jikoji anymore.
All right. Yeah, Jikoji has dropped out.
Yep. Yes, they've dropped out. I have a feeling it's coming from Jikoji's end this time because, oh, wait, there's a new mission.
I agree.
Where are you located, Akbar?
I'm in San Ramon, Pleasanton area, East Bay.
Okay.
I wonder if Jikoji can hear us, though.
Oh, that's true. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I'll be if the connection goes out, everything goes out. It's not only the video or audio, everything goes out, so I don't think they can hear us unless someone has a phone that they can call them in. And
yeah, I'm going to regretfully sign off in a few minutes too if it doesn't come back.
Yeah,
same here.
It's awfully windy, you know, here too, where I'm at. Yeah, so.
Well, that was a beautiful ceremony. I wish I'd gone up this morning. I don't know why I didn't. I have a thing this afternoon. So I wanted to be sure I could get to my event in the afternoon. But really, I'd rather have been at Chikoji. Oh, well.
I just tuned in just for the Dharma talk, so I missed that part. But
oh, it was lovely.
Party. I haven't been in person so in a long time.
Pamela is
coming. Hi, friends. I'm back. Oh, there they are.
Pamela,
I don't know if
Pamela, could you hear us?
No, but I'm really happy to know that you're making friends.
good, but I was a bit worried.
I was just talking about nirvana and samsara a little bit. It might be familiar to most of you. And what I was just making the point of is sometimes when we stop our reactions, when we take that little pause between an impulse coming in and our knee-jerk reaction, when we notice and pay attention to that little bit of pause, that's a little taste of nirvana, right? A little pause, a little bit of release from our suffering, just in that little space. So I think you've all had that chance in life. And if you haven't noticed it, please notice it from now on. You have a choice not to suffer. By the way, the word samsara is translated as, this is one translation, going around in circles. That seems right, right? Going around in circles, suffering is going around in circles, or wandering, like aimlessly. Oh. Maybe you noticed your mind doing that a little bit today. That happens in sitting meditation. Your mind going around in circles or wandering all over the place. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's okay. Please give yourself permission to have that mind too. If you don't get upset with yourself about what is happening in any given moment, that's a great start on your own liberation, your own nirvana. So when we commemorate the Buddha's nirvana, we celebrate the extinctions of the three poisons, greed, aversion, and ignorance in his life. And we kind of celebrate the possibility of that for us too, right? We have a chance in this lifetime to release greed, hatred, ignorance. So we're celebrating the possibilities for us too. When these three poisons, or sometimes they're called three fires, when these are extinguished, the endless grasping of the mind saying, this is me, this is mine. I want it to be this way. I want to control it. I don't want it to be that way. That's the cycle of samsara. That ends. Usually for most of us only temporarily, but you will have a taste of it if you practice. And when you have a taste of it, probably turn back. Being liberated from that sense of bondage is profound. And it may change your life. Changed mine. Anyway, you know this. If you've ever caught yourself making an assumption and thought, wait a minute, is that true? You've had a little taste of nirvana in that pause. If you've ever stopped yourself before saying something that was really not going to be wholesome for you, for everybody else, you've had a little taste of that freedom. If you've ever caught yourself judging yourself and you stopped and said, wait a minute, that's not fair. Thank you. Thank you for your practice doing that. If everyone in the world did that, pause, imagine what the world would be like. So I think it's fair to say that this practice, this whole world of meditation and Zen and following the Buddha's teaching is all about how to care. Not just for yourself, for everything, for every single thing that you create and imagine in your life, everything you meet, your socks, your shoes, the sponge, the air, the dirt, sticks, the stones, the wind. And of course, there's all of us too. So the Buddha's last words that Jiro-san read today were this. Now then, community of practitioners, I exhort you. By the way, there's lots of translations. I'm going to give you two new ones right now. Community of practitioners, I exhort you. All fabrications are subject to decay. Bring about completion by being heedful. This is my favorite translation, my favorite translation of the day. This one. Things fall apart. Tread the path with care. Things fall apart. Tread the path with care. Things fall apart. That seems pretty self-evident, right? Seems kind of obvious. Things fall apart. Anything that's subject to birth is subject to disintegration. Things falling apart. We pretend for much of our lives that that's not true. But it's really true. And if you're here today, you already know this. It also happens to be a fundamental tenet of Buddhism. It's called impermanence. Things fall apart. But the second half, tread the path with care, that seems deeply informational to me. Tread the path with care. When we practice, when we make it our choice to live according to the Buddha's teachings, we naturally develop this kind of big care. It kind of goes on and on forever. And it seems to be at the heart of our practice. You could say Zen equals care. So what does it mean to care? And guess what? There's an old Zen story that I think helps explain. This is from Japanese 13th century, and it's true. As true as any of these stories are, but this person really existed, and she's a woman, so that's kind of cool. This story is often referred to as Chiyono's No Water, No Moon. We were talking about the moon at breakfast. No water, no moon. Chiyono was her regular name, like Pamela is my regular name, but she had a Dharma name, Mugai Nyoda. She was a real person. She died in 1298, and she's thought to be the very first Japanese woman who received transmission. And she was the founder of a Zen Buddhist convent, and her temples still exist in Japan. It's pretty cool. So here's Chiyono, or Mugai's story. She ran away from home because she had heard something about Zen, and she wanted to be enlightened. Sound familiar? She wanted to be free of suffering. So she ran away to a monastery where she served as a servant. She wanted to be enlightened, and her version of enlightenment was being a servant in the 13th century. She was of simple means, probably illiterate. And one day she approached an elderly nun practicing there and said, "Look, I can't read and I can't write. I'm of humble birth. I have to work to survive. Is there any possibility that I could attain the way of Buddha, even though I have no skills?" And the nun answered her, "Your practice is to carry the water in this bucket. Carry the water in the bucket up to the monastery. That's your practice. If you don't fall into delusive thoughts, there is no Buddha. There is no sentient being. There is only one complete nature. If you want to know your true nature, you need to turn toward the source of your delusive thoughts. And guess what that's called?" She didn't say guess what. "This is called Zazen." So Chiyono responded, "With this practice as my companion, I have only to go about my daily life carrying water in this bucket, day and night. That's what I'll do." And every time at night, she'd go out with her bamboo bucket to get the water. She would notice the moon's reflection. Well, not all the time, when the moon was up. She noticed the moon's reflection in the bucket. So some of you are very familiar with these moons reflecting, right? It's a common theme in Zen. When we see the moon, we're actually seeing the mental reflection of the moon in the bucket, right? This is something we created in the bucket. That's also what happens when we see each other. When we see each other. Just like the water in the bucket is reflecting the moon, when we consider another person, we're actually seeing the reflection that this particular mind has created for that particular person. I don't know what part of the story you're at, but I'll tell you. She's carrying the bucket. She sees the moon in the pail, and that's just a reflection that her mind makes up. Just like when we look at each other, we're not really seeing a person. We're seeing a reflection of what our mind makes up about Jackie and Ben and Akbar and Randy and Daryl and Peter and all of us. But one night she goes out, she's practicing wholeheartedly, gathering her bucket of water in her bamboo pail, which, by the way, she's been keeping together with strips over and over again, repairing, repairing, repairing. One night, just as she notices, oh, there's the reflection of the moon in the water, the pail just bottom falls out. It's just gone. She's been holding it together with all these little baby bamboo strips, and it collapses. And guess what happens to the reflection of the moon in the water in the bucket? It's gone. There's no moon in the bucket. And when she saw that, she had a great insight. And she wrote an enlightenment poem, and this is it. With this and that, I tried to keep the bucket together. And then the bottom fell out. Where water does not collect, the moon does not dwell. There's lots to do there, but I'm going to stick to one line. With this and that, I tried to keep the bucket together. Does that feel familiar? Yeah. That's so us to me. It's very moving. It's all of us trying to keep the bucket together. Keep our lives together, keep on top of it, doing what we're supposed to be doing. And then it falls apart. We all instinctively understand Yono's grasping at practice, wanting enlightenment, understanding the intent of her aspiration, which is the intent of all of our aspirations, to try to relax her grip on what she thinks is reality, to what she thinks is the moon in the bucket. And yet, her conditioning, just like our conditioning, is a deep river and creates a barrier between her actually experiencing reality. That's what falls out. All of those efforts are about protecting what I have of who this person is. And we suddenly observe the idea of who we are as an obstacle to our own happiness. When the bottom falls out, we can't keep it together. We give up being a good daughter. We give up being a good girl or a good boy. Let go of our hyper-conscientiousness. We let go of our hyper-vigilance. Okay, am I safe? Am I safe? Is this okay? Is this okay? Am I doing the right thing? We release. We let go of the idea that this self is going to get in trouble for not doing anything right. Sounds like nirvana, right? We let go of the idea that we're not okay. Just the way we are. So the moment the pail breaks and the water's gone, Chiyono can't see the reflection anymore. She probably looked up at the actual moon and said, oh, there's the moon. Not the reflection. She's still pointing that out to us right now. Here, Chiyono is still teaching us that. That there's a difference between reality that we create and the reality that exists. Our perception of reality is the reflection of the moon, but there's also the moon. Reality is actually looking up and seeing the moon, not what you think the moon is, but the actual moon. And the pale had to break for her to see that. She had to let go of being separate from the moon. Hi, I'm back. I was just saying that some of us are kind of called to ask these questions of ourselves towards this observance and awareness of our own conditioning. We drive up this mountain sometimes to ask that question. Is this a wholesome expression of our lives? Is this what we really want? Is this a choice we're making? Because you are making those choices. No one's got a gun to your head, folks. You're choosing how to live your life. What are you really doing on this planet with your life? No pressure, but are you being true? When this thing that we think we're holding together with bamboo strips in that bucket, when it falls apart, it's like a little death. So it has something to do with why we celebrate the Buddha's death. In that death is a release from samsara, from the constant, repeated conduct that's causing us suffering. Just like the Buddha's, we can be released. We can step into an awareness that's always been here. We just finally are willing to look at the moon. So you have this opportunity too. Every time you think it's out there, it's in here. And this is an expression of caring, to pay attention to your own life, and in doing so, to our collective lives. So the Buddha's final words for us, tread this path with care. It means to let things fall apart. Sorry, it's not easy. Part of what we let fall apart is our ideas about who we are, who we're supposed to be. To just start seeing the moon as it is, to see what is actually here right now, to accept and enjoy this moment, what it is, not some idea you have about it, but this. This is how we care. I thank you for trusting Jikoji to walk hand in hand with you as you navigate how to care for your life. Thank you. And now you get to ask questions. And as I mentioned to all the beginning meditation people, there are no dumb questions. There are sometimes dumb answers. Mostly not, hopefully. But ask anything. You can ask about the talk. You can ask about the ceremony. You can ask. You're safe. You do not have to be hyper.
This fits perfectly with her Dharma talk.
We're going to risk actual talking. I'm afraid it's going to suddenly come back on and we'll be yakking away.
I don't think it impacted it too badly because I think Pamela would have told us, but
yeah. Yeah.
It's a great demonstration of impermanence, isn't it?
Apart. Zoom is falling apart.
Yeah, like everything in the universe, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. How are things, Jackie, where you are up there in the Santa Cruz Mountains?
The weather? It's cloudy and a little bit breezy, so it hasn't arrived yet, but it's not slated to arrive until later.
Right. you guys as it's coming over. Still sunny outside, half sunny, half cloudy for me.
Yeah, we had a beautiful morning. Of course, this is also beautiful, right? No judgments.
It is. It is. Although I have to admit, this rainy, rainy, damp, cold, no sun weather really affects certain physical, medical conditions I have. Mm. I might have to retire to a desert.
That's what people do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm thankful that I'm not living in Seattle or back east right now. But it's raining and snowing and storm. So it's pretty nice in Northern California right now. With all the rains.
That's true. It's all relative.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, my sons live near, one near New York City and one near Detroit, and but they both like the changes of seasons, right? But of course they're very young, so they might change later.
I lived in Chicago area for more than 12 years, never got used to it. The first chance I got out of there. Well, I was originally in California, so I knew what it was like to live in California or in a different environment. So when I moved to Chicago, every year I asked myself, who would settle in this weather when they came here many, many years ago? But so the first chance I got, I left, came back.
My parents are born and raised in Chicago, and I remember going back as a kid.
I think that where you grow up imprints on you. And so people that grow up, like I grew up in Scotland, so it wasn't as bad as Chicago, but you know, we had all four seasons. And then you come here, it's a Mediterranean climate. The seasons are completely different. And it takes a while.
And yet we acclimate to the weather such that people in California, when it gets 40 degrees, they have to wear their down jackets. Whereas in Chicago, when the forecast is above zero degrees Fahrenheit, people roll up their sleeves and roll down the car windows that, hey, it's a nice day.
Yeah, I remember that when I first came to California. But the thing that I like to think about is the plants. People plant gardens as if they're back east. And we're not there.
And yeah.
If people really engage with their gardens, then they'll really experience the seasons and plant things that work in a
There's so many great natives, especially up there in the Santa Cruz Mountains, right? You could just have native plants or native trees.
I have mostly natives. I just mostly grow what grows locally, but I have some ornamental things too. Things for hummingbirds.
Yeah, wow, that's cool. You got redwoods too, right?
Yeah, I got redwoods on the north side of my ridge and mixed evergreen and oak, a lot of oaks on the south side of the ridge. So
nice mix.
It's really lovely. I've got scrub jays on the south side and Steller's jays on the north side. It's totally amazing how they just have their own habitat.
Right within your property, there's microclimates and habitats that are very different, right?
Absolutely. I also have chaparral on my south side, which I love.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.